and welcome to the MBOM podcast, where you'll learn to master the business of yoga. MBOM is a proud part of the Wander Barn podcast network, and I'm your host, Amanda Kingsmith. I'm a 500-hour registered yoga teacher, a yoga business coach, and a total business geek. Here at MBOM, you'll learn everything you need to know to create a sustainable yoga business by learning from myself and guests from around the world about how they built their yoga businesses. And about how you too can become a successful yoga teacher, studio owner, and much more. All right, let's dive in. Hello, everyone, and welcome back for another episode of Mastering the Business of Yoga. I am super excited that you're joining me for today's episode of the show. And today's episode of the podcast is brought to you in part by Offering Tree. Offering Tree is your one-stop shop for all things yoga business. And when I say one-stop shop, I truly mean it. Everything from your website to your class scheduling to taking payments to your email newsletter to courses, memberships, and much more. And I'm going to tell you a lot more about Offering Tree later on in the episode, but if you'd like to go check them out, it's totally free to get started. And then you can use the link offeringtree.com/MBOM if you would like to upgrade to a paid plan and get 15% off. And today on the podcast, I am really excited to be joined by Annie Schussler. Annie is a business coach and the founder of Rebel Therapist. And in this episode, Annie shares how one-on-one and group programs can be great ways for yoga teachers to diversify their income and how to create programs that are successful. There is really nothing more challenging than pouring your heart and soul into a program that you're super excited about and then seeing it flop, i.e. not getting as many people registered as you wanted to, or maybe not even getting anyone into the program. So in this episode, she shares her top tips for creating a program that will succeed, how to get over perfectionism mentality when it comes to your programs, and much more. So there's lots of goodness in this episode, and especially as we head into the new year, creating new workshops, new registered programs, new courses, and all of that goodness. So I hope that you enjoy this episode of the show. And without further ado, here is Annie. Welcome to the podcast today, Annie. I'm really excited to have you here with me today.
I'm so excited, Amanda.
Yeah. And where are you joining me from?
I am in San Francisco, the unceded territory of the Ohlone people.
Amazing. Sounds lovely. What's the weather like there this time of year?
It's this gorgeous kind of foggy situation this morning. So it's like really cool and foggy.
Okay. Sounds nice. I like it. I haven't been to San Francisco for so long, but hopefully I'll get to visit again soon.
Yes.
Amazing. So I'm stoked to dive into this conversation. I think it's going to be so, so relevant and just so helpful for, you know, both myself and the yoga teachers listening. But maybe before we dive into kind of the heart of what we're going to talk about, can you tell me a little bit about yourself, your backgrounds, your business, Rebel Therapist, and all the goodness that you do?
Absolutely. So I was a therapist, a psychotherapist for 20 years. And in about the middle of that journey, so about 10 years ago, I realized that I was starting to burn out as a therapist. And I also realized that I had a kind of healthy and positive obsession with business and had been kind of informally helping a lot of my friends and colleagues with their businesses. So I started ramping up. I started ramping up a business coaching branch and started out with just helping other therapists and then kind of branched out into helping all kinds of healers. And then a year and a half ago, I closed my therapy practice altogether. So I am now full-time, which to me means like somewhere between 20 and 30 hours a week in my business coaching role, which is called Rebel Therapist, because I love working with healers who are really wanting to work in innovative ways. They're wanting to create their own programs, their own stuff to decolonize their work and to use their gifts in ways that may not have been done before, and are creating really unique businesses.
Yeah, that's amazing. Thanks for sharing that. And did you shut down your practice like pre-pandemic or kind of start of pandemic? Or
oh my gosh, Amanda, it was pretty bad timing. So I had told, I mean, I know a lot of people had bad timing stuff happened in 2020 and I'm one of them. So in the summer of 2019, I gave all of my therapy clients notice that I was going to be shutting down my practice. And then it was timed to end in the beginning of May 2020. And so I was saying goodbye to people right in the beginning of the pandemic. And we were also, just like everybody else, we were forced to go to remote therapy sessions. And so we never got to say goodbye in person. So it was really a sad timing thing, but I wasn't leaving because of the pandemic. It had been like pre-planned.
Okay. Yeah. I'm always curious with that timing because yeah. I just feel like, I mean, nobody could have known what was to come, right? And I talked to so many teachers who maybe started their business like the end of 2019 or the start of 2020 or made a big transition. And they're like, yeah, I had no idea that the world was about to get like, you know, flip-flopped like 360 degrees. So
yes.
Yeah, I can imagine that was a pretty big transition. And then for you, I'd actually love to hear like what that transition was like shifting from, you know, the clients you're working with and in the capacity that you're working with people. And even I'm assuming like the hours you're working and that type of thing.
Yeah, I was, as a therapist, I was really burning out. And part of it was that there's a part of me that really loves forward motion, that really loves to watch people make changes and make really tangible changes. And as a therapist, I didn't get to lean into that part of my personality as much. Like I needed to sit and be slower, more patient. And I have that side of me, but I was kind of like, for me, it was kind of like when you are overusing a certain part of your body. And so you're kind of throwing things out of whack. It was like that in my kind of internal world, that I was leaning too heavily into some parts of me. And I really wanted to use more of the action-oriented part of me. And so stepping into business coaching has been really delightful, and getting to, yeah, set my hours in a way that truly works for me. Getting to create programs where, like, my jam, it's different for everybody, but my jam is really small group work. And so getting to work online with small groups of entrepreneurs, it means that I get to set my schedule where I say, okay, this is the time of the week and this is the time of the day when I am at my most energetic. So that's where I'm going to set my core offering. And you know, I like to have theme days throughout my week where I know each day of the week what I'm dedicating myself to, whether it's creating content, running my programs, doing marketing activities like my podcast, and you know, getting to also set aside time to vision what's going to happen next in my business. So I've really got lucky now in that I get to set my schedule the way that I love it. And as a therapist, I probably could have done that more than I did. But the schedule wasn't as ideal for me in the way that kind of my inner technology works as a human.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Thanks for sharing that. And I think it's really amazing to hear that you've got, you know, a schedule now that's really working for you. And I think it's hard. Like, even if you're kind of working for yourself as a therapist, it's like, you know, you want to provide these services to the people you're working with. And sometimes that means working nights or weekends or scheduling emergency calls and that type of thing. And that stuff can really lead to the burnout that you were talking about. So I think it's amazing you've been able to find the balance with this new version of your business.
Yeah. And I think there's something that can be kind of sneaky that I could absolutely fall into as a business coach. And I know I fell into as a therapist, where we make these little exceptions where, you know, we think, oh, I really want my schedule to be this way, but this one person, they really can't make that work. And it's okay with me to like do this one Saturday session, or it's okay with me to work this one evening. And I always want to ask people like, but is that really going to work for you? Is that setting you up to feel energetic and to feel like you can sustain this in the way that you want to? And I think those little exceptions that we make are probably a bigger deal than we realize and something we should stop doing.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I think that boundaries as entrepreneurs is huge. It's so hard. I've worked so hard at trying to create these in my own life and my own business and, you know, honestly struggled with it in a lot of ways. And so I completely understand when somebody's like, but, you know, but at the same time, we really do need to set these boundaries for us and honor if something isn't working for us. So I'm curious how you started working with yoga teachers.
Yeah. So I love yoga teachers. I mostly end up working with psychotherapists still. And one thing that I absolutely love is that over time, I'm getting to work with all different kinds of healers. And I find that yoga teachers in particular are what the world needs right now. That I feel like we need embodiment in our daily lives, in our work, in our relationships, in social justice. We need embodiment more than anything else. So I am always really thrilled when I see that I have a yoga instructor in my program. And so I think I've gotten to work with more yoga teachers over time because the way that I'm talking about my work is out of the box and it's innovative. It's really encouraging people to create programs that work with their gifts. And I think that, I don't know about you, but I think that that is something that yoga instructors are drawn to, that they don't want to be put in boxes. They don't want to be told to do things a certain way, that, you know, they see you, I should say, see the world in a more holistic way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. I completely agree with that. And I think that's been my experience as well. And I think that there's also a lot of yoga teachers, I think, who kind of enter the space of yoga and they want to do this as a career. They want to make, you know, a sustainable income for themselves. They don't want to work a part-time job on the side or have to serve or have another side hustle. They just want to teach yoga. Mm-hmm. And I think that it's, you know, you realize quite quickly when you start teaching that you need to kind of build other aspects of your business. And the reality is that in, you know, a 200-hour yoga teacher training, we're really not taught the fundamentals of like how you create a successful program. And I mean, I get it. 200 hours is just really not enough time to teach somebody how to teach yoga. And, you know, so much of the foundations of yoga on top of teaching them, like, here's how you like expand your business outside of just teaching group classes.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I think that one thing that it sounds like through your business you've recognized, and I think definitely through mine I've seen as well, is that, you know, teachers have this, yoga teachers specifically have this sort of, I guess, this fire and this energy and this keenness to really serve. And they can get really excited about like the things they're learning or the things that they've learned within yoga. And they're like, okay, I'm going to create, you know, a program on this. And then they pour their heart and soul into it and they put it out there and then they don't get any signups. And then it's very discouraging. Like, why is nobody signing up? Why is nobody coming? And I'd love to dive into a little bit, because I know this is a lot of the work that you do with your coaching. You know, how do we kind of turn this around, especially when we have a program that we put out there and it just kind of feels like a total flop?
Yes. And so I love to help people through that process of looking at what just happened. Like, what the hell just happened? This program was so great. I put, like you said, I put my whole heart and soul into it. No one signed up or only one person signed up. And so the first thing I always encourage people to do is to take a minute and feel the disappointment, feel the feelings, not try and just push through and solve it, but hit pause and, you know, and go to your own embodiment practices as you let that disappointment flow through you. And then, first of all, to know like you're in really good company. Like, this has happened to me. This has happened to so many of my colleagues who now run programs that are super successful and always fill. This just happens in business, and it's okay. Like, it doesn't necessarily mean anything about you or about your program. But then we can also kind of look at what might have gone wrong, like what might be missing or what might we want to do differently next time. And so one thing is, a lot of times I find that people run, they try to run group programs before they have a large enough audience. And that's just a math problem. Like, that's not a you problem. It's just a math problem of, you've got to build your audience up to the point where you've got at least like 100 to 200 folks on your email list. And if you don't know what I'm talking about when I say email list, like, just basically folks who have signed up to hear from you about your work. And then it also really helps to have a specific niche. So if there's a kind of problem that you work particularly well with, to lean into that niche as you're putting the program out there, so that people know, oh my gosh, like, this person made this for me. This is not just for everybody. And then looking at, like, did you, even if you put your heart and soul into it, did you kind of hide a little bit, or did you let everybody know about it with a ton of enthusiasm? Because sometimes we can feel embarrassed, or we can feel like we're being too much, or we're kind of marketing and annoying people when we announce our programs. And it's so important to be your program's biggest fan and to tell people about it with no apology and with a ton of enthusiasm. So those are some of the things I like people to look at as they're kind of doing that postmortem of, like, what went wrong here?
Yeah, for sure. And I love that it starts with, like, acknowledging the feelings. Like, yeah, you know, I've had this same thing happen, like, put my heart and soul into something, put something out there, and then, you know, crickets. Mm-hmm. And it is hard to not kind of, I guess, like, wear that a little bit, or take that on, I guess you could say, in terms mm-hmm. of, like, this is about me, or there's something wrong with me, or I didn't do it good enough. And there's a million things that can happen in that internal dialogue that just tells us, hey, we're not good enough to do this, and we should just maybe give up. Like, maybe I should just go back to, you know, waitressing on the side, because that was easy. And yes, I think that just being with those feelings is a really great starting point. And then acknowledging that it's not always about you, and then looking at, like, what you can do the next time. Like, how could you put this out in the world and, you know, actually get people into it? And I think that starting with that audience piece is key. I was just having this conversation with somebody else this morning, talking about how, you know, if you do have a really small audience, like, maybe trying to fill a group program is not the best place to start.
Yes.
Might be best to start with maybe some classes, some smaller offerings, maybe some one-on-ones, you know, get to know your people, get your name out there, start building up before you start putting out these bigger group programs. And I'm curious, do you have any thoughts or tips in terms of, if somebody is at this point and they do want to grow, you know, other than having an email list, what are some other tips for how we can start, like, growing our audience a bit more?
Yeah, beautiful. One thing you said there, I just want to really marinate in, is, like, a one-on-one offer could be a great place to start. And so, like, one yoga instructor who just created a one-on-one offer is Alice Huff. And so she created something for young women who are dealing with anxiety and who are high functioning professional women. And it's integrating mind, body, and space. Like, so I love this because it's so unique that she works in addition to mind and body. She also works with helping you to curate your space and create an environment for yourself that's going to be really, really nurturing to you. And her own space is like filled with plants, which I always love. So yeah,
that's amazing.
So good. And so this is a one-on-one offer, which I think is brilliant because for most of us, if we try to run a group offer and it doesn't fill, we cannot help but do the thing that we were just talking about of saying like, oh, I'm not enough. I'm not good enough. This is about me. This is a sign that I shouldn't even be doing this. And starting with a one-on-one offer that you can repeat and that you have created a particular structure for, I think that's, for most of us, that's a really good way to get started with a program. And in terms of the audience building, I think it's a lot about collaboration. So your audience is already out there in someone else's audience. And so I think it's about getting your work in front of other audiences. And it doesn't have to be like, we don't have to be discovered by Oprah, although that, I mean, that would be beautiful. It can be just like collaborating with other people who also have small audiences in the beginning and then growing together little by little. And I really see people succeeding in groups. Like people succeed with their colleagues, with their friends, promoting each other, creating opportunities for each other. So audience growing, we don't want to, this is what I did in the beginning, Amanda. It was like, it was sad to watch. In the beginning, I kept talking to the same like 10 to 20 people over and over again. So I would run a webinar and I would tell the people on my list about the webinar and many of them would come, but I wasn't like getting in front of new people. So it's really about partnering with other people, whether you're going to be a guest on their podcast or do a webinar together, or even just promote each other's work that can kind of give you an engine to your audience growth. And it also can help a lot to have a valuable free offer, even if your free offer is just that you create great regular content for people, like whether that's a podcast or a newsletter, that you're creating something really thoughtful that's made just for your niche, and then letting everybody know that they can get on your email list to get in on that. Those practices will build your audience over time.
Hey, yoga teachers. We're just taking a quick little break from the podcast to talk about Offering Tree. It's the holiday season, and you might be buying lots of gifts at all sorts of different stores. Are you offering the same opportunity to your audience? One of the reasons I love recommending Offering Tree is because you can create your own online store to sell products like videos or PDFs or even courses in the same place that you build your website, schedule your classes, and run your membership. If you've been hesitating to sell videos because you don't want to learn yet another tech system, then Offering Tree could be the solution you've been waiting for. You don't have to upload your videos to YouTube or Vimeo. Offering Tree hosts them for you. Offering Tree also integrates with Stripe, so it's easy to accept payments for buying or renting store items. And if you already have a website that you love, you can easily embed Offering Tree's courses and membership platforms into your site. But here's why I really love working with Offering Tree. They are a small business just like you and I, and they really listen to their yoga teachers and their wellness entrepreneurs. So if you reach out and you say, hey, I need something on the platform, they're truly going to listen to you. And one of the reasons that the platform is so awesome is because yoga teachers have been helping Offering Tree make it better and better over the years. And of course, it is gifting season, so I have a gift for you too. All listeners of MBO get a special discount on Offering Tree, up to $88 off an annual plan. Head on over to offeringtree.com/MBO to get your discount. Once again, that's offeringtree.com/MBO. Happy holidays and back to the show.
Those are really great tips. So thank you for sharing those. And so once somebody has
you know, gone through this process of spending some time, you know, building their email list, building their audience up. And they're like, okay, you know, I'm ready to kind of conquer this group program thing over again. What are some ways that we can kind of go into this and actually have some really positive and exciting results with our programs?
Yeah. So I always love to see people start really interactive with their participants. So sometimes we have this fantasy of like passive income, of creating something that someone could just watch or listen to when we're not around. And it can be, you know, our bank account filling up while we're asleep and never talking to people. And that, you know, that could happen, but it's usually that kind of thing is going to happen for folks who already have a huge audience. And I don't actually even love that model in general, because what we find is that people make bigger transformations when they actually get to have an experience with you, when you're actually leading them through something. And so starting off where you're teaching or you're facilitating everything live, I think is a beautiful way to start. And it also means that there are less barriers to getting started. Like, you're not going to fall into perfectionism if you make your program a live program the first time, or let's say even the first two or three times that you run it. You're only doing things live. Maybe you're giving people recordings of those live sessions, but you're delivering everything live and usually online live. And then I love seeing people really decide ahead of time, not, hey, I'm going to give people everything. Like, I'm going to, you know, give them everything I know about yoga. No, like looking at what is the particular transformation that you'd like someone to walk through in your program, and then giving them actually as little as possible to get them through that transformation so that they can actually experience and do those things and really make use of them rather than feeling overwhelmed.
Yeah, those are some really great tips. So thank you for those. And I like the idea of being able to do something live and kind of actually interact with people. And I think this is a great way to get feedback as well.
Yes.
Like, especially if you're putting a program out for the first time, do you recommend doing any type of like beta programs, like smaller, maybe more affordable versions of it prior to like a bigger launch?
I do. So that's kind of the approach that I teach people, is to do a pilot run of your program. And for some folks, that's going to be lower price. For some people, it isn't going to make sense. Like, if you have a program where you're like working, I'm just going to make this up. Like, let's say you're working with hedge fund managers, you probably shouldn't do a discounted rate the first time you run the pilot, because they won't take it as seriously. But, you know, for most of us, you might have a lower price point. And the biggest difference is just really letting people know, this is the first time I'm running this. You're going to get a ton of me, and I'm going to be hoping for feedback throughout. And it'll probably be a smaller group, or it'll be one-on-one. And so it's kind of a great deal for them. And it's also a great deal for the facilitator, the teacher, because they get paid for creating this thing. So instead of going behind the scenes and trying to create something for months and months, hoping it'll be just perfect, it's really delivering it live as that pilot and saying, you know, how is this going? And are you needing more of anything? Are we going too fast? Like, really getting to check in with people throughout.
Yeah, that's really amazing. And I love the idea of, you know, having this like beta that we can get feedback and stuff. And then in terms of your experience with people kind of like structuring their programs and, you know, how long they should be, do you have any insights in terms of like how we decide this type of stuff? Because I feel like this can be often one of the biggest challenges, right? So you decide you're going to do a program, you have the topic, you might decide, okay, I'm going to do it live with my people. Then, you know, how long is it? How long do we run the program for?
Yeah. So I have tried so many different things with this, many failed experiments. And what I recommend is looking at that transformation that you've decided this is what the program is going to get people to, and then deciding how long do you think that takes, given your experience, given, you know, what you have noticed in working with folks or in your own experience, how long do you think that takes? And then creating a program to help people in that length of time. So like for me, my program is helping people launch a pilot, and I experimented with this being 2 days long so that I could really teach everything that folks need to know. And then they could go off and do the pilot themselves. And that did not work. Like it worked for some folks, but mostly people really needed some help implementing. And then I experimented with a really long program of like 9 months, and that worked better, but a lot of times people would procrastinate because you can actually get a pilot out there way faster than 9 months, and we'll tend to give something the amount of time that we have. So I found the sweet spot to be between 5 and 8 weeks for this particular outcome, and it's going to be different depending on what your outcome is. So I know folks right now who are running couples workshops. So Tia Hackett is running a couples workshop that is, I believe, going to be 2 days. And this is a really good amount of time for a couple to learn some new tools around communication and then practice those tools and make a plan going forward. So really, I think it's about experimenting, looking at how long does this transformation take with my help? And then let's try that. Let's build a program around it and try that. And then that's going to be one of the things that you have to be open to iterating is maybe we needed a little more time. Maybe we needed a little less time. And so knowing there's not a perfect answer. But if someone's totally drawing a blank, I really like programs that are somewhere between like 5 weeks to 3 months to start with. That tends to give people enough time to really dig into a process and not so much time that they like drop out or life gets in the way.
Right. Yeah, no, that definitely makes sense. And I think that's really helpful. And I think it kind of ties back to the idea of a pilot, right, too. So if you can kind of run this and maybe get some feedback from your people, I feel like the people going through the program are going to tell you what they would have liked. Like, hey, you know, I kind of reached my like peak excitement at 6 weeks, and doing these extra couple weeks was just like really hard for me. I didn't get that much value out of it. Or maybe it's like vice versa, where it's like, hey, I really needed like more of this over the next couple of weeks. And then that can kind of give you a good idea for where that sweet spot is. Cause I think this is one thing that's extremely challenging with creating programs is that, you know, of course you want to understand what the content is that you're creating and offering, and you want to understand who you're offering it to and what they need out of it. But then it's kind of hard to predict some of that other stuff. And there is a little bit of trial and error that's involved with that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I like, in terms of feedback, I like to listen to what people say, but then also watch what they do. So a lot of times, no matter how long your program is, people will say in the feedback, like if you give them a feedback form at the end, or if you just ask them like, oh, I wish it was longer, but then you want to watch what they do and see like, where does engagement tend to drop off, and how, like what percentage of folks are able to accomplish what you were hoping they would accomplish. And so I like to look at those things just as much as what they say, because folks sometimes won't even, I know this is true for me when I'm in a program, I might not know what would make the program better, but the facilitator can kind of watch my actions to see like what I make use of, what I like, what videos I never open, that kind of thing.
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely. I was actually just in a group coaching program. And I think the first bit was like 7 weeks. And then we decided to extend it for like 6 more weeks, but do it every other week instead of every week. And so that ended up stretching over like 3 months. And we just finished up that. And I feel like I kind of, you know, got a little bit of that, like I had that momentum after the first 7 weeks. I was so stoked, so excited to dive in. And I did feel a little bit of that, like, you know, midpoint in the second part, in the second program, like, I could probably like be done with this now. And, you know, I can continued on and we ended it really, really amazingly. And I got a lot out of it and stuff. So I don't regret it at all, but it is kind of interesting the way you're talking about, like, you know, my feedback as a participant was like, yeah, I want more. Like, what more can we do right now? Cause it was, you know, just at that point where it's like, I feel like I'm just getting momentum. Like I need more. And then a couple more weeks later, I'm like, okay, I think I'm kind of like, you know, I'm good now. I'm ready to take a little break.
And we need that time to like integrate what we've learned. Another tip around length of program is like start, if you're on the fence, like start relatively short with your pilot, because then you can reiterate more quickly. So like, you don't want to get into a 6-month pilot program. For most of us, we wouldn't want to do that because then we have to wait 6 months in order to do a different iteration. And if we realize 2 months in, this should have been a 2-month program, then it's just going to take longer to, you know, to right that ship.
Yeah, absolutely. And one thing you said earlier on that I wanted to get into a little bit was the idea of like not giving everything to somebody. And I feel like this was something I learned the first time I created a course was, hey, I just want to teach you like everything about the business of yoga. And then recognizing like, wow, that's very overwhelming for somebody to be in like a gigantic course that has like everything that I think they might need, that I've deemed they might need. Whereas like, you know, some of this is just not what they need in this moment. So I'm curious if you have any kind of thoughts or pieces of advice on how we sort of, I guess, just figure out like what to include in a course without getting it to be too big. Cause I do think that a lot of times, especially as yogis, yoga teachers, we get so stoked about something. It's like, hey, I want to teach you everything I've ever learned about yoga in a 6-week program. Yet that's going to be extremely overwhelming, of course.
Yes. And so like, this is a perfect example. So as someone who's not a yogi, but who has benefited a lot from yoga, I can say like, I need you to explain things to me very slowly. And then I need some time to practice. It will be so profound for me as I'm learning these tools and integrating them and understanding the context and like maybe hearing some stories about how other people have lived into these things. Like you will feel like you've given me barely anything and I will be full. So when it's our area, it's like, we want to share everything. And we feel like some of this stuff is so basic that we're used to teaching. But for the person who's receiving it, it's like, we need to go slow. We need to learn something, then have a chance to practice it, then have a chance to talk about it, then hear about it again. So we really need to go a lot slower than usually the teacher thinks. So I think it's that really important thing of figuring out ahead of time, what is a realistic transformation that I want as my goal here? And then only including what's absolutely necessary to get there. And that will be enough. And then trusting that giving a smaller amount of curriculum than you might want to is going to be such a gift to your participant. And that perhaps like if they've got it, like let's say you're doing a one-on-one program or a small group program and you can see they've got this, like they're ready for more. You can always add more. But if you put someone into overwhelm, it's harder to pull back. It's harder to keep them engaged. So I would say 99% of the time, I'm telling people like, I think you've got a bit too much here. And you don't like, if you hear yourself at the beginning of, let's say like a session or a class saying, okay, we got to get started because I have so much to teach you all today and we don't have enough time. Well, that's probably not a great idea. Like you probably don't want to design it that way. You want to have some ease and some And I think yoga teachers are excellent at this, like building some ease in and some time to get into your body and make space rather than rushing through.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. I think it's cool to think about too, that if you kind of take it slow and really build that foundation with people, there's so much more opportunity for them to continue learning with you down the road, like whether or not that's maybe one-on-one, or maybe you're creating more courses or programs or that type of thing. Like being able to give somebody this like gift of the foundations of things in a really digestible way, I think really opens the door for more learnings. Because kind of like you said, it's like, if you kind of understand what you're learning, you know, you're going to crave more of it. You're going to ask for more of it from the teacher. But if you kind of get into this space where you're just like kind of information overload, oftentimes as humans, we sort of turn away or shut down from that. And that might be the person who just doesn't finish your course or doesn't finish your program, or is kind of like, yeah, I'm like not really interested in engaging much more with this. You know, I'm a little bit like over it, I guess you could say.
Yeah. And I think it can shoot people into shame too, if they feel like, well, I'm not getting it. There's too much here. I'm overwhelmed. So I'll just shut down.
Yeah, absolutely. And so one other thing I wanted to ask you about was just this idea of actually, you know, getting our programs out there, getting our courses out there, because I think that a lot of times people can get kind of stuck in this mentality of making things perfect. And I'm a big fan of like better out than perfect, because there's always time to revise and change and add on and all that type of stuff. But I think that perfectionism mentality can be really crippling for a lot of people, because they'll just sit and tweak and tweak and tweak, and it's, you know, then you just never put the thing out there. So do you have any tips for kind of how to work through this, or how not to get caught up in this?
Yes. I think a mindset shift around perfectionism that's been really helpful to me is the idea of excellence instead of perfection, and mastery instead of perfection. So looking at it kind of the opposite way, like I heard this quote from Charlie Gilkey, who wrote a book about getting things done, basically. I'm not remembering the title of the book, but it was great. And Start Finishing. That's what it was. And it was this quote about, if it's a really important thing, what's important is for you to start right away. So the most important things that you care about the very most, you should be starting right away. And the path to mastery and the path to excellence is iteration and is doing. So if we think we're going to get to mastery or excellence by going behind the scenes and tweaking, like, we are so wrong. We're not going to be creating something that really transforms or something that really helps people in our most effective way unless we just start doing it. So I think striving for excellence instead of perfection has helped me so much to get my work out there so that it can get better and better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that. I think for me too, just like very similar to what you said. And then also, I think giving myself deadlines has been really helpful. Mm. Like, I feel like having, you know, a deadline, like as if I worked for somebody else and they were like, Amanda, you have to have this into me by this time. Because of course I would do that, right? Like I would put the perfectionism aside. I would do my best on it. And, you know, I would obviously get it done. But when it comes to my own business, it's so easy for me to be like, oh, I'll just keep tweaking it. I'll just keep working on it. Like I'll do more tomorrow or the next day or next week or whatever. And I feel like having those deadlines and taking them seriously has been something that really helps me.
That's brilliant, Amanda. That is brilliant. And like when I just got an email today from one of my clients announcing her program and giving a date of when it's starting. And I was like, yes, because once we tell people, like we tell the world, I've got this program coming on this date, or I have this webinar that is going to be happening on this date, then we're so much more likely to do whatever it takes to hit that deadline and to not, you know, don't give yourself a deadline that's too far out there. Like, give yourself a deadline that's realistic, but will push you to start and take action quickly.
Amazing. I love that. And so do you have any other tips or anything else that you want to share today in terms of, you know, encouraging our yoga teachers who have maybe had a bad first experience with a program to kind of, you know, go out there and do it again and hopefully have some success with it?
Yeah. I mean, I just think the world needs you. Like, the world needs the tools that you have right now in the biggest way. You know, if we are going to create the world that we need to create, a world that is free of white supremacy, a world where people can really flourish, like, we need yoga teachers helping people get into their bodies. And so don't give up. Like, give it another try. And like, we've been talking about starting with a program that's really likely to succeed, that's really well niched, that maybe is one-on-one to start. Like, there's going to be some strategies that can help you make this thing work. And yeah, I would say just don't give up. Like, if you're telling yourself that you don't have what it takes or you're not enough or any of that negative self-talk, like, really question it.
Yeah, those are great, great pieces of advice. And especially like the, you know, question that inner dialogue, because I do think that sometimes our inner dialogue can be very, very cruel, can be very, very mean to us. And, you know, sometimes I think most of the time it's really not valid. Like, of course we're all enough. And of course we can all be successful. And sometimes we just need, you know, some tools in our toolbox or the assistance of, you know, somebody like yourself with coaching or that type of thing to just kind of get to that next level. But, you know, it's so important not to give up, especially, you know, you're right. Like, yoga teachers have these really beautiful gifts. And I think the world needs this stuff out there. And, you know, that's really where, you know, hopefully you and I can kind of support these people who might be struggling a little bit.
Yes. Yes. I love that. Absolutely.
Amazing. On that note, can you share where people can go to learn more about you and your business, work with you if they feel drawn to that?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So if you're listening to this and you're like, great, I want to do a pilot program, but I don't know how to start a pilot program. That's absolutely something I can help with. And if you want to do a free mini course on this, on how to start a pilot program, you can go to rebeltherapist.me/mini. And that's a great way to get started.
Amazing. Anywhere else that you're hanging out on the internet these days?
Yeah, I have a podcast called Rebel Therapist. And so that's another place where I like love talking to healers.
Awesome. Well, we will make sure that there's links for both of those things in the show notes. And yeah, I really appreciate your time today, Annie. This has been a really fabulous conversation.
Thank you so much, Amanda. I've loved talking to you.
All right, friends, I hope that you enjoyed that episode of the podcast with Annie Schussler. Make sure you go check her out. And throughout this episode, she talked a lot about one-on-one programs versus group programs. And so in MBO and Behind the Scenes, we dove into this a little bit more, how to know when you're ready for a one-on-one program versus a group program, the differences between them, you know, the differences between how we talk about them, price them, market them, and all of that good stuff. So if you want to dive into that a little bit more, as well as get access to all the other behind the scenes episodes, please head on over to patreon.com/MBM yoga. I would love to see you there. As well, a huge thank you to the sponsor for this week's episode. Thank you to Offering Tree. Make sure you go check them out. OfferingTree.com/MBOM for all your yoga business needs, for all your marketing needs, and much more. And if you have questions about Offering Tree and if it's right for you, make sure you reach out to them or to myself. And thank you for listening to this episode of the show. It's been a pleasure having you here, and I will see you next week. Bye for now. Thank you so much for tuning in for this episode of the podcast. To find links, notes, resources, and everything mentioned in today and all episodes of the show, you can head on over to mbomyoga.com. You can find the podcast and myself on Facebook and social media at Mastering the Business of Yoga. And I would love for you to join the private Facebook community, Yoga Business Badasses. If you have any questions, comments, or feedback, please make sure you reach out to me at info@mbomyoga.com. And last of all, if you enjoyed this episode of the show, please make sure you hit subscribe and leave a review for the podcast. It would mean the world. Thanks so much for listening, and I'll see you next week. Namaste.